Welcome back to episode 15 of the Fearless Flyer. My name's Grant, and I'm one of your hosts, and with me is James. How are you, James?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I had a good week, so I'm looking forward to getting into another episode.
Yeah, that's good. We're looking at takeoff and landing in strong winds today. So in this episode, we're going to discuss why we take off and land into wind and how we deal with strong winds, particularly when it's gusty. And we'll finish our discussion on winds that blow across the runway, which we call crosswinds. But James, do you just want to have a little quick recap on the last episode? We did episode 14.
Yes, last episode, we were looking at slowing down devices, or they're also known as aviation as retarding devices. We predominantly looked at spoilers and speed brakes, which are the same thing. They just have different names. Speed brakes in the air, I believe, and spoilers on the ground. And they're just on the wing normally, and they're used to either help this aircraft slow down or spoil a lift over the aerofoil of the wing to help the plane stay on the ground once it's touched down. We also touched on reversers on the engines. I think that was it, because we did braking on the wheels the week before in episode 13. So I think that was episode 14.
Yes, that's right. We discussed brakes, so there was no need to thrash that. So the reason we take off and land facing into the oncoming wind is simply to reduce our ground speed, and hence ensure we use less runway. To understand the reason why, let's say we have an aircraft that needs 50 knots of airspeed over the wing to get airborne. We'll just stick with knots because it doesn't matter what unit it is, but we're saying 50 knots of airflow over the wing to get airborne. Now, let's say there's no wind today, so we take off on our runway, which is at a sea level airport. Once we hit 50 knots on our airspeed indicator, we lift off the runway. At the same time, our speed over the ground is exactly 50 knots. In the process of accelerating to 50 knots, we've used up a certain amount of runway to get airborne. Now, let's use the same aeroplane but exaggerate the wind and say that the wind is blowing straight down the runway at 50 knots and we're facing into wind. And we'll call this a headwind, which is what it's known as. It's going to be a very windy day, but today at the same airport, the wind is a constant, steady 50 knots headwind. If we're sitting on the runway, our airspeed indicator would already be at 50 knots, and we could lift off vertically because we already have 50 knots of air going over the wing. However, our ground speed would be zero. So in taking off, would look like a helicopter going straight up. And as a result, we would have used absolutely no runway.
But just to reiterate why we're taking off into the wind there, if we turned around in the 50 knots to take off with the wind behind us, that now becomes a tailwind because the wind's coming from behind us. And our airspeed indicator, if it could read negative numbers, would show minus 50 because obviously we've got 50 knots of wind coming from behind us. So now we start to accelerate. Our ground speed would have to get up to 51 knots before our airspeed started to show something positive. In this case, at 51 knots ground speed, our airspeed indicator would be showing one knot, and we'd have to get it to show 50 knots airspeed in order to get airborne. So when the airspeed indicator showed 50 knots, we could get airborne, but our speed over the ground at this stage would be 100 knots. So you can now imagine how much more runway we'd have to use to accelerate up to the speed with a tailwind.
That's exactly right. And hence, you can clearly understand now why we like taking off and landing into wind. If you ever watch a bird take off, it generally takes off facing into wind. So that's a good scenario. They've worked it out well ahead of us. The same scenario can be applied for landing. From the first scenario of a calm day with no wind, we'd be using up runway to land. But if we had our 50-knot headwind scenario coming into land, we'd actually come in and land vertically like a helicopter. So you can see that taking off and landing into wind uses less runway, and the stronger the wind, the less runway you would use.
But as everyone knows really in the real world, the wind is never really just a simple, smooth, straight amount of knot.
Yeah, that's correct. And the stronger it is, the more the speed of it will likely fluctuate. And this is due to things like mechanical turbulence caused from things on the ground like buildings, trees, hills, etc. at low level. We call these fluctuations gusts. So air traffic control might advise of, say, a wind from a direction like a westerly at 20 knots gusting 30 knots. And in aviation speak, we'd call this a wind at 270 degrees, 20 gusting 30. which means the wind is a steady 20 knots, but there are short periods of time when it might pick up to 30 knots. To help us on the approach, we normally fly a set speed, but when it's gusty, we add a gust factor in as a margin of safety to ensure our airspeed remains well above our minimum speed safety margins. And in doing so, it gives us a bit more control due to the gusty nature of the air, and hence enables us a more responsive reaction to controlling the aircraft when on approach in such gusty conditions.
So all airports, when designed, when geographically possible, have their runways pointed into the prevailing wind to make it easier for pilots, safer. However, nature doesn't always have this nice straight wind every day. So you can't obviously just pick up the runway and place it into the wind on that day. So you need to be able to land with the wind blowing across the runway. Also, generally, runways are designed into the prevailing wind. However, due to some terrain at some airports, they sometimes have a limited ability in how they're designed. And I think you wanted to speak about one of these airports, didn't you?
Yeah. One of the ones I used to fly to is on the island of Madeira. And this island's located 320 miles or 520 kilometers west of Morocco. And it had one such runway built on stilts on what is effective a volcanic island. It could only really be built in one direction. So terrain dictated the direction and not the prevailing wind. As a result, there are lots of crosswinds and turbulence associated with this airport. It was actually quite a specialist airport to fly into, and you required authorization and additional simulator checks by the Portuguese authorities to do so. So this is one such airport where it was literally the only place they could place the runway. Like you said, most runways, airports designed into the prevailing wind, but sometimes terrain dictates that they can't do that. So coming back to our problem and where we are going with this is that sometimes the wind will blow straight across the runway, and we call this a crosswind. The problem is we're transporting our aircraft from three-dimensional airspace to two dimensions. And once we're upon the ground during a crosswind approach and landing, this adds a little more complexity as you cross from the air to the ground or vice versa. So crossing a fast-moving river gives us a good analogy of the problem. Do you want to have a go at crossing a fast-moving river, James?
Yeah, so say you're standing on the bank of a fast-moving river, which is flowing from left to right as you face the other bank. Now, directly opposite you is where you want to be, as sitting there is a pot of gold.
Oh, yes, gold. Now, how much gold?
A lot.
Okay.
Millions and millions of tablets of gold.
Okay, I'm swimming. I'm starting swimming now.
So if you put your head down and you started swimming across that river, facing the other side of the bank at all times, you're going to end up downstream on the other side of the riverbank. That is to the right of where you started, because the fast-moving water is flowing left to right, and swimming across directly has pushed you downstream.
Yeah, that's a good point. So your heading was always directly to the other bank, but your track across the bottom of the river was at an angle. And the faster the river, the more the angle to the right, basically, in this case, because the water's going left to right. And thus, the further downstream you'd be, depending on the strength of the river.
So what you have to do before you go after your pot of gold is to pick a point to the left of the pot of gold and aim for that. That will ensure that your track across the bottom of the river is a direct line from where you are now to where you want to be on the other side.
Yeah, that makes sense. So therefore, you understand that the stronger the flow of the river, the further upstream, in this case to the left, you'll need to aim as the river's running left to right. So you'll be aiming to the left. So where we're aiming would call us our heading in flying, and our direction over the floor of the river, that's the line that will take you straight to the pot of gold, would call this direction your track.
Heading is the way that you're pointing. However, track is the actual direction you're moving over the ground, and there will be a difference because of the effects of the wind, or in this case, the river.
Yep.
So on a day with no wind, your heading and track are going to be the same.
That's exactly right. They're going to be exactly the same. So coming back to landing in a crosswind, right? So it's similar to the river. Our hypothetical runway, in this case here, it has a wind blowing across it from left to right, like our river. So on approach, the nose of our aircraft, and hence the heading of our aircraft, would be pointed to the left of the runway. However, our track over the ground would be in line with the runway. The stronger the wind, the more we need to point the aircraft nose into the wind to maintain our track in line with the runway. So on approach, this is never constant due to the changing of the wind speed. So we're making continual adjustments all the time to maintain the runway center line or track to the runway. And you can see this in some aircraft which have cameras looking out of the aircraft. They are generally lined up with the nose of the aircraft. So you could be sitting there wondering where the runway is as you're getting closer to the ground, as the camera's pointing the same way the aircraft is heading. But the track is actually different.
So for example, the A380 has a tail-mounted camera, and you can clearly see that the heading and track appear different on the approach when there is a crosswind. And it would appear that the aircraft, in this instance, is crabbing towards the runway. So for these crosswinds as a pilot, is there one method or multiple methods to landing on crosswinds?
Yeah, there's a few methods that we use. One's called touchdown in the crab. And we just talked about the crab thing before with the A380, like it's crabbing towards the runway. D-crab in the flare is another one. Another method is side slip, which is keeping the wing low. So I'll have a little chat about those. So imagine a plane is suspended just above the runway and its wings are level and the nose is pointed straight down the runway. On a no-wind day, it would just sit there. However, if there was a strong wind blowing across the runway, say from left to right, our suspended aeroplane would drift across the runway towards the right. We term this as drifting downwind of the runway. So to stop the drifting, we could do one of two things or a combination of these two things. The first thing we could do is we point the nose into the wind, like that swimmer going for the pot of gold. So the stronger the wind, the more you point into the wind. In this case, we'd be pointing it to the left. And this we would call the crab method. And it feels as though you're flying sideways on the approach as a crab walks sideways. The second option would be to keep the nose of the aircraft lined up with the runway, but tilt the wings toward the wind, in this case to the left. We would be dipping the left wing down and thus the right wing going up. And this has the effect of pointing our lift vector to the left, and thereby it counters the drift of the wind trying to push us downwind. And we call this method the side slip method. So if you had a cup of water sitting on your table on the approach, and the pilot adopted this method, the water would spill out. In this case, with the left wing low, it would spill out the left side of your cup. The third method is a combination. And basically, it's the crab method initially. And once the aircraft is above the runway, we change positions to the side slip method, and we call this D-crab in the flare. So let's have a look at them in an aircraft operation. The crab method means we keep pointing into wind even as the wheels touch down. So large commercial jets are generally designed to land whilst actually in the crab position so that all the main wheels touch down on the runway at the same time, despite the fact that the nose is still pointing into wind. However, as the wheels touch down, the momentum of the aircraft is in line with the runway, but because we're pointing upwind, the aircraft can want to do a slight turn upwind in the direction which we're pointing upon touchdown. So we need to put some control inputs in to keep us on the runway after landing. The side slip method means holding the controls in a cross position on the approach and sticking with the wind from left to right. This would mean we're holding right rudder in to keep the nose lined up with the runway and holding the left wing down. So when the aircraft landed, in this scenario, it would be the left main wheel first touching down, and then followed by the right main wheels. This latter option with the wing low on the side that the wind is coming from obviously has limits to it, and particularly for large jets because you have engines and flaps hanging off below the wing, and you might risk hitting these on the runway, but even hit a wing on a runway if it's a really strong crosswind. So there are limits placed upon the aircraft, and we'll talk about these soon. The third method, it's called the D-crab and the flare technique. And this involves more coordination, but it's an essential technique for all pilots to learn. So this works by flying in the crab position, pointing the nose into wind. And just as we get above the runway, we move the nose around with the rudder. So using the same scenario with the wind blowing from left to right across the runway, just above the runway, would move the nose from the left to right using the right rudder. We call this kicking the nose around as you're pushing the right rudder in this case. The problem is now the wings are level and the nose is pointing in the same direction as the runway. So that wind is going to start blowing you across the runway or downwind of the runway towards the right side. So what we do is to stop us blowing off the runway in this scenario, after kicking the nose around, we would roll the wings into wind. That is, turn the control wheel to the left, thereby lowering the left wing, raising the right wing. And it's the same concept as banking the wings to the left, like going into the left turn. So this has the effect of pointing our lift on our wings into the wind, which would thereby counter the effect of the wind trying to push us downwind of the runway.
But we wouldn't turn to the left because we've kicked in the opposite rudder, that is the right rudder. In essence, we've changed to the side slip method.
Yes, that's right. And so there's the combination. You do your approach in the crab and your de-crab in the flare. So we can employ a combination of these methods in a large jet. However, we don't need to fully change into a side slip method by performing a combination of slightly de-crabbing in the flare with a bit of side slip. We lessen the chance of striking something hanging off the wings, and we reduce our tire wear, and it helps with our directional control upon the landing rollout. However, the majority of the large jets are designed to simply land in the crab position, as this significantly reduces the chance of striking, say, an engine pod or a flap track on the runway. Large jet aircraft also generally have swept wings. So as a result of the aircraft yawing around after landing, as we talked about kicking the nose around, this has the effect of swinging that big wing around that is facing into the wind. And the effect that this has is it generates more lift. So it wants to lift up more. So we must stop it lifting by putting some more aileron in into wind, thereby holding that wing down.
So there is quite a lot potentially that's going to be happening during a crosswind landing.
Yeah, that's correct. And regarding strong winds on takeoff, very noticeable on a large jet as well. As you're accelerating down the runway, the wing that is on the side of the runway from which the wind is coming, that wants to generate more lift than the other wing. And the other wing is downwind. It's partially shielded by the aircraft's fuselage. So we simply need to counter this wing wanting to lift by using the ailerons. But we just do enough to keep the wings level so that they don't lift up. The aircraft at the same time wants to weathercock around into wind. So we keep it straight using rudder on the runway.
So in essence, there's a lot more coordination going on from a pilot's perspective in a crosswind than when the wind is straight down the runway. And I'm guessing, therefore, there's going to be, especially in smaller aircraft, limits on how much crosswind you can actually have when taking off or landing.
Yeah, well done. There is a limit to how much we can bank the wings into wind, as eventually the wing that's banked too much into wind, it'll hit the runway, or the engines or the flaps, that they might hit the runway. And we also run out of the authority of the rudder, that is the ability of the rudder to give us sufficient directional control. So the manufacturer tests all this and they come up with a crosswind limitation for each aircraft. If the wind exceeds our aircraft limits, we do not land or take off. Remember, we want to avoid what is known as a runway excursion, and we don't want to damage the airplane because someone else might want to use it again.
So you, as a pilot, just strictly adhere to the manufacturer's takeoff and landing limitations?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
So these limits, we did a bit of research. A Cessna 172, which is a light sort of four-seater propeller aircraft, very common, in fact, around the world, it has a crosswind limit of around 15 knots. But comparing that 15 knots to the 777 that you fly, what sort of crosswind limit are we looking at with your aircraft?
Yeah, it's unfortunately not that simple. It depends on how it's loaded, the weight of the aircraft, plus the actual type of runway surface we're landing on. So I'll give you some numbers. Most takeoffs for us on the 777, the crosswind limit on a dry runway is 40 knots, and that's 46 mile an hour or 74 kilometers an hour. But if the runway is badly contaminated, say it's got ice on it, then our limit's only 15 knots. Or 17 mile an hour, 27 kilometer an hour. So you can see a huge drop and they're well over half. For landing on a dry runway, it's even higher. So 45 knot crosswind limit or 51 mile an hour or 83 kilometers an hour. However, A wet runway is only a little bit less. It's 40 knots. But on an icy runway, it's 15 knots. So landing, 45 knots, dry runway, wet runway, 40 knots, icy runway, 15 knots. And there's other limits as well. So if we say have 1 hour of our engine reverses not working, then we reduce all these crosswind limits by 5 knots or 10 kilometers per hour. But remember that the side slip method I talked about before, and we risked hitting something hanging off the wings. Well, Boeing does not recommend that we do a side slip approach in crosswinds above 28 knots, exactly for that reason that we might risk hitting something.
I was just going to say, all these numbers, are they for like a constant wind or are they for gusts?
They have been up and down with the policies for years, but they now at the moment, they do include the gust factor.
Okay.
So you can see that contamination of any sort on the runway can have an effect on controlling the aircraft whilst on the ground. And hence, the more contamination, the less control, and thus the crosswind limit is reduced accordingly.
So interestingly, it is really rare this, but some aircraft can land in the crab position as their landing gear is like manually lined up with the runway. An example of this would be the B-52 military bomber. I'm sure you can find some photos if you Google that on, well, Google.
I have seen a picture of that and it looks really funny. The gear's lined up with the runway, but the plane's pointing well across the runway. It looks really funny, but it seems to work very well.
Yeah. And just to sum up then, so takeoff and landing into the wind is a good idea because we're using less runway. So that's why you always take off and landing into the wind where possible. Flying on windy days, it simply means that you're flying a bit faster to ensure you have good positive control of the aircraft. And there are techniques to flying in crosswinds, and there are also limits as well to ensure that all airline operations can be conducted with adequate safety margins in place. And that also applies to general aviation. There are still limits with a small aircraft that pilots should be adhering to.
The manufacturer places limits on all aircraft, and they've got different terms, the absolute limits, recommended limits. Also, some companies, they even place even more restrictive limits on it due to the operations, just to enhance safety. So, yeah, there's the crosswind limits are there for a reason. The next episode, we're going to go in to discuss air conditioning, filtration, and a little bit on pressurization. And given the COVID pandemic, we'll be looking a little bit about the filtration system in a bit of detail and talking about the HEPA filters. The episode after that, we're going to have a look at the depressurization in the cabin, which is something that you hear about in the safety briefs, yeah. But on to another subject. A few episodes ago, we were talking about your exams, and have you got the results?
Yeah, I mean, I passed everything. I got an A, a few Bs, so that's a win.
Yeah, that's good then. Oh, well done. Well done. That's a good result. How many exams did you have to do?
3 or 4.
Yeah. 3 or 4. you've put it out of your memory already. Oh, well done for that anyway. That's good.
That's the trick.
Yeah. Okay, well done. Okay, well, from me, it's goodbye. I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, and from me as well. I hope you've learned something new and not scared when you go to the airport now on windy days because everything is safety first. So have a good day.